Hello, and welcome back to Pop a la Carte. This is episode 46, and I'm Tatiana, who is here with...
Jessica!
Angela.
And eventually, Valerie as well. But right now, it's just us, and we are going to do the least detailed DCTV update ever, because some of us only watch 1.5 of the shows, and... And then we will do a K-drama update, letting you know which ones we're watching, that are currently on air, that we're catching up on, or that we are rewatching because we were obsessed with them. Okay. So first, DCTV. Supergirl finally finished, or limped to its conclusion, this week. I don't understand. Like, I could not tell you right now what the literal plot of Supergirl's villain was this season. Because I feel like it was so convoluted. I don't understand still how Rain exists in this world and how she can be split with Hera and Elrox or merged and how Sam can get powers from a fountain in her mind and then lose those powers after she fights Rain. So I don't know. I don't know what the writers are doing, but at least we have some really great character moments, which I think Supergirl had some really great, like, emotional moments throughout the season. But I can't really, like, give it high ratings because the plot didn't make any sense. What did you think, Jessica?
Yeah, I think I would break down this season into thirds. And I think the first third was a mess. It was kind of all over the place and really suffered a lot on, like, the social issues that they wanted to hit. There's a lot more misses than there were hits. And there are a couple of different, like, character arc issues. Specifically with Morgan Edge and Lena. Mm-hmm. It didn't really seem to gel very well. And then the other big one, I think, was Kara's depression, if you will, over Mon-El and her questioning her humanity. The second third, I think, is when the season really kicks off and we really get into Rain, which is kind of slow going in the first third. And that's where all of, like, the most interesting parts of the season take place, I think. And then the last third was just a hot-ass mess.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it sounded like it was a mess, but it did, like, in terms of what I want for the characters, which at the end of the day is what I'm here for first, although plot's still important. Here for, not watching. But I left not even halfway through season two because I was so angry at what they were doing with the characters. It sounds like they're all finally in the place I wanted them to be. I mean, I'm going to be forever bitter about James and Kara. Like, that's just going to be forever bitter. But at least it seems like they are starting to give James something to do.
Yes. Sometimes. I mean, they remember that he is a series regular, at least. There is that.
He's had definitely a better season this season than he had last season.
Yes, for sure.
Them recentering him around Catco and, like, backing off of the whole Guardian, even though he was a little bit kind of flaky with Lena in the beginning. Like,
yeah.
In that middle third, my favorite part of the season, when we got it together.
Yep.
I think that... kind of centered him as well.
It drives me insane. Like, it's such a wasted opportunity with him as the head of Catco. Like, because they clearly, Supergirl more than any of the other ones seems to want to be, like, doing commentary on the world and what's happening and yada yada. And it's like, he's the head of this global media conglomerate. Like, there's so much that he could be doing that would be so relevant right now, and they just don't. And also, you think that would make him extremely busy.
Like Jessica pointed out, which I didn't even notice, when he outs himself as Guardian at the end of the season, he doesn't even, like, call a press conference to Catco to do it, you know? Like, he doesn't even use his own media outlet to... Yeah, that's a huge story!
We love you, James, but you're making nothing of it, your job.
So, yeah, Catco's... And obviously, they just forgot that Kara's a reporter. Kara had a shit season.
He did. It's, like, shit season. If we're doing, like, the MVPs of the episode of the season and, like, the, I don't know, what the LVP. The least valued players are definitely winning Kara.
Mm-hmm. They were doing an okay job, like, 3 or 4 episodes in, of balancing, because I was like, oh my god, I'm actually seeing Catco, but the weird thing is that they did that because Lena took over Catco. Or not took over, but, like, she bought it to help save it from Morgan Edge or whatever. And so then we see it because Lena's there.
With Lena, I think she's had, like, a lot of really strong standout moments throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I think particularly with her relationship with James, and she's finally, like, letting her walls down
with
Yeah, I feel like that was, like, her big, like, breakthrough in coming in more to her own.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wish that they, and they're not going to do it because it the season ended and she still doesn't know that Kara's Supergirl and still on this, is she evil or not evil, great line that Lena keeps, like, tap dancing over and across.
Mm-hmm.
That's still a little bit stalled. But I think with, I would say, in the back half of the season, her relationship with James, when that starts to take off, you start to see more of her layers come down.
Yeah, it's nice also to have, to see someone unequivocally on her side, because usually it's, like, yeah. Lena against everyone for at least an episode until they believe her for the next episode, and then they don't again. So I'm glad that she and James have reached a place where they can both just mutually support each other, despite whatever else is going on.
Uh-huh.
But they're definitely beating a dead horse with the whole, like, oh no, is the thing that she's doing just good or bad?
Yeah.
I don't know how, like, they've gone so far from centering Kara in Supergirl. And it's like, you know, sometimes other characters who are not your main character are more interesting. But it's like they went out of their way to make Lena the central character in that everyone's connected to her. You know, like Sam is her friend and also her employee. And she, like, barely has a connection with Kara. Like, at the end of it, Sam's leaving and she, like, hugs Lena and Alex goodbye and has, like, a nice scene with them. And with Kara, it was just, like, a smile. Like, all right, we had no connection whatsoever. It's very weird to me.
Kind of related to that, we had that one commenter who was like, I'm tired of everybody wanting to know where Superman is in the Supergirl show. And I think generally that's a valid point. But the one thing I would say is I would kind of sort of where's Clark more than last season, because, like, he deserves to know that there's Kryptonians who have survived.
Yes.
He deserves to meet his aunt.
Yeah, it's like, that's the thing. Like, it's one thing to be like, oh, Superman's doing something, which is what they did in, like, season one. Like, oh, he's got whatever to do. So you're like, that's fine. I don't need Superman around because I want it to be about Supergirl. But to not even acknowledge that he's probably out there also trying to save the world doesn't make sense, because it's literally the whole world that's in danger right now. Like, just because you have Mon-El there to bring up the percentage, wouldn't you also want Clark to be doing something to bring up the percentage even more? Like,
I would think, like, or even, as I said, on an interpersonal level, like, he gets to meet his family.
Yes.
That's never gotten to meet.
Speaking of that, like, they really dropped the ball with Kara meeting her family, which was, like, kind of, like, it could have been so much, like, you could have used Erica Durant so much more. Like, she's so great, and she has such great chemistry with Melissa. But then it's, like, they got, like, two scenes to, like, catch up, and one of those scenes was to push Caramel, which didn't go anywhere, so thanks for nothing.
And that's actually one of the episodes I tuned in for.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see that reunion. I was like, I don't care what was happening. Obviously, this plot is a mess, but, like, I want to see Kara, like, get to be with her mom again. And then I was like, okay. That was nothing.
So. Yeah. It's very strange. Like, you'd think they would have made a whole, like, emotional ordeal. It was literally like, oh, I met my mom. And next episode, all right, I'm moving to Argo. See y'all never. I was like, wait, what? You couldn't have a whole episode deciding whether or not you're going to do that? It's just kind of weird, like, that Kara is shortchanged specifically. But I will say that in the finale, they did mention Clark, and I was so relieved. Like, the newscaster was like, and Superman just saved Madagascar. And I was like, oh, see? Thank you. That's all I needed. I just wanted to hear
that. Yes. He was too busy paying Kara's rent or something.
Because that's the thing. It wasn't, in the previous episodes, it wasn't like they pretending Clark didn't exist. They were talking about Clark, just not what Clark was doing to help stop the crisis of world killers. It was like, oh yeah, I remember when Clark wrote this article. I guess I have to read through all his articles to find out how he figured it out. Because, like, you couldn't call Clark and say, how did you figure this out? It's like, wait, what? Anyway.
Especially because he's the best Superman I've seen in a really long time.
Is there any MVPs for the season, would you say?
I mean, I guess, and it's kind of, I mean, Kara should be the MVP for season, but I feel like she kind of on the back burner a lot. I would say Sam, because she was the big bad and the hero, kind of in the same way. And I think for a character that was introduced in this season, like, we didn't have her in season two before. She's a new character. And so for her to have the kind of character arc that she had on the show was kind of incredible, because you get her from the beginning, her alpha, all the way through to her omega when she finally defeats Rain and defeats basically a version of herself. I think she had the best through line. I would say that Alex and Lena also also had some pretty strong character moments. Alex kind of faltered in the first third because she and Kara were both on their kind of pity party.
Right.
Like, a lot of their story was taken up by a failed
relationship. OT.
But I think the back half was particularly kinder to Alex in the fact that she kind of centered herself around motherhood and can she have both and figuring that part out.
Yeah, and I think John had a better season than last season, too, because he had, like, one strong storyline. Yeah.
Yeah.
With his dad, which is probably the strongest storyline, like, single storyline for the season. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm happier about Brainiac than Mon-El. Like, he's cute.
Mm-hmm. I do love Jesse Rath.
They're being really coy about it, but it seems to be where they are hinting they're going. But I don't trust them at all. So. Yeah.
It is kind of like, because, like, so far in their interactions, there isn't really an indication that it's romantic or that it could be romantic. But they also haven't had that many of them. So it could it's easy to flip the switch next season. They were sneaky. They gave him a human form now that he can turn on just so that people won't be turned off. I see y'all.
They give their switches. They have their romance on-off switch, and they think that's just how it works.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. I do have to turn off my, like, real world brain with this sometimes. I mean, DEO is clearly just this complete shadow organization that operates. However, because John works for the government, like, that's not how it works. Like, to get another job, like, you have to go into U.S. jobs.gov, and even if you're going to promote from within, you have to advertise the job publicly because that's the law. with government jobs, yeah, like, you can't.
Well, I did not know that.
There's been a number of ones that I've helped to apply for that it's, like, written so specifically because there's only, like, three people who are qualified, but they have to publicly advertise the job because that's, we gotta be fair.
Right.
Like...
That's interesting.
So I was just like, Alex has to apply for this. She has to put in, if she wants her next GS level, turn it off.
That's for sure.
Two-thirds of the season. It was pretty good.
All right. Now, how is about The Flash?
Flash is the only one I've seen. Almost every episode, I missed, on purpose, a couple of the early Ralph-centric episodes.
As you should. It's understandable. They had another one that's kind of like a messy season, but they also had some nice moments and some good character additions and some terrible character additions.
Yeah, I think The Flash, and it seems to be kind of a pattern that happens every season with The Flash, where they start out really interesting and start out kind of strong. It's like the opposite of Supergirl, because it's like that middle third is like the wonky, what are you doing? When are we going to get back to the plot? And then it takes like the final half third is like, oh yeah, we have a plot to get to that you have to finish in the next six episodes. And it kind of like ratchets up again. I still think that The Thinker was a really good big bad in a departure from the Speedster villains. And that was one of the better parts of the first third of the season, because we got to see what the big bad was actually planning because they were following other metas. We got to see outside of Star Labs. We got to see 13 people's different points of view and how they got their powers and how that affected them and their stories. And I think those are like the best moments when you're like not in Star Labs, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of world building you get when you expand to all these other like different characters. The bad part about it was that all these characters died.
Yeah.
And like some of the metas that you really enjoyed and that you really liked, once DeVoe got them, they were, and unless you're Ralph, you never came back out. And so I feel like that's just kind of a waste. Like, why go through all that world building and story building with these really interesting dynamic characters only to kill them? And then we can never have them again. So I thought that was...
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice to have a little bit more variety in the outcomes. Like, some of them could live at least, but no. I definitely agree, especially in the early episodes, getting to actually see, like, whole new sides of Central City. Like, places we would never would have gone to if not for those metas. Like, the Silicon Valley-esque side of Central City in episode 2 and the, like, casino in episode 3. But yeah. What did you think? I'm, you know, more curious from your, like, sort of unbiased, like, not really a Flash-specific fan perspective.
I mean, I think it's the first time that I've followed... Well, no, I watched the entire first season of Supergirl, but that was, like, kind of DCTV, kind of not the first season. So getting used to all of these logic holes that you have to just... Yeah, I got stuck for too long on too many dumb little things that it's just, like, you have to let it go and watch it. But yeah, I like our people. Like, I like the people.
Yes.
But yeah, the Thinker was kind of such a wasted opportunity because it would have been so interesting to not do a speedster villain, and I feel like all of the pieces were there, and instead they were just. I don't even mind that they lost all the time, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, that's okay for me, but it took too long to find out what was happening
mm-hmm.
and what his end goal was. And once we knew the end goal, then they fixed it too quickly. Like, I don't know.
Right.
I don't understand why he waited so long to know what he was up to.
Like, the first couple episodes of The Thinker, I was like, oh, this is nice because they don't even know that there is an issue, and we're just seeing behind the scenes what he's developing. It's kind of like, it reminds me a little bit of season one. But once they knew about the Thinker, it was weird because like, he doesn't know what DeVoe's planning. Like you said, it kind of zaps the urgency of it. Like, yeah, we have to stop him, but from what? You know? Just like, Nebula's evil. He's definitely going to do something evil when I have to stop it. As opposed to actually trying to figure out what his motive could be and then feeling the urgency to stop it.
If our team could go out and have fun like some of the other shows do, I feel like most of their lives are spent in Star Labs and talking about things that they can't solve until the last three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I really want them to change that. All these, like, kind of fun things that I wish The Flash would kind of lean into more of and building on character relationships a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget exactly where I was going with that statement, but it still needed to be said.
So. Yeah, I mean, we do need to have more fun.
The trial of The Flash was a wasted opportunity because it was, like, one episode with the worst trial ever.
Yeah, and Cecile also, didn't get to do her job at all.
But yeah, like, I mean, I get because they had their end goal that they wanted Barry in the prison, and that's why they did it. But I still feel like then in the back half, you had all those episodes where they just kept losing against DeVoe, but DeVoe was also waiting to do anything until they tried something first. So the pacing was just really weird. You could have smushed a bunch of those episodes into one and then spent at least like two or three episodes on the Trial of the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could still, for all the DeVoe beat them all the time, like, Cecile could have done a really good job, and they still could have put Barry away, because,
yeah, whatever. I mean, that's the thing, like, that's the one instance this season that Arrow did beat Flash on. Everything else, Arrow is definitely the bottom of the pile for the DC TV this year. But for their Trial of the Arrow, I don't know what you actually called it, but it still was just one episode. But Oliver was actually trying to stay out of prison, unlike Barry, in the end.
And that would have even been okay if Barry was like, it's obvious that DeVoe wants me in jail and I want to find out why, so I'm intentionally bombing this to get him. You could have still had then everything be the same and he would have been like, okay, well, at least that's why.
Mm-hmm.
That all went so terribly.
Yeah.
Like,
and I guess, like, there's times where it felt like, at least Barry felt like he won, but he didn't really win because that's what the Thinker wanted him to do all along.
Yeah.
But hopefully in the next season, they'll have some true losses for the villain so the villain can feel like, you know, his back's up against the wall or something mm-hmm. like that. And give the team a couple of W's somewhere in there. Like, they don't all have to be L's until the finale.
I agree with that for sure. But at least let Cecile have the opportunity to do her job. Because that was just sad. Yeah. It just made her look like the worst lawyer ever. Anyway.
You make Cecile a terrible lawyer and then you make her a mother. Flash, I don't know that I like this. Like, what are you trying to say?
She'll get to be a lawyer still next season. It's okay. In fact, Ralph is going to be a regular next season, which he basically already was, so that's not really that different. But they said they're going to do more of his private investigation stuff. Barry's got his job back. And they did say that Iris was going to do more journalism. And now Cecile's a regular, too. So I have to assume they didn't make her a regular so that she could sit around on Joe's couch nursing her child. And I assume that they didn't make her a regular so that they could have yet another person standing in Star Labs finishing other people's sentences. So hopefully that means that we will actually get more of, you know, like, I'm currently watching While You Were Sleeping, and I do love the whole interaction of journalist, cop, and lawyer. Because these are all things that are needed to put bad guys away.
Oh, yeah, that's so good While You Were Sleeping.
So, who were the Flash MVPs?
Well, of course, my girl Iris.
I think she did have a very good season.
Like, objectively, she had a very good season. Mm-hmm. Not just because I'm a fan of hers, but I think objectively, from where she started out, a little bit angry at Barry for leaving
mm-hmm.
and having to deal with the, like, sudden, like, because it was, like, immediate. Like, they didn't even get to talk about it. She didn't get to process it. Keep running things and leading the team, because that's what she's always done,
mm-hmm.
to him coming back, and then them figuring out how to do this together. And then all the way up through the end with her taking on Marlise, who's my other standout.
Yes.
Yeah. I think they both had interesting dichotomy of storylines.
Mm-hmm.
Skipping over to Marlise, just from where she started, because it seemed very equal with her and her husband in the beginning, and then the middle third was just really awful to her, and I hated that part of the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And then for her to come through in the end and to be redeemed, I think it says a lot about Kim Engelbrecht and how the writers wanted to write for her,
yeah.
wanted her to give her that story and give her that depth that really made Marlies more than just the thinker's sidekick, if you will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the end she felt like a more complete character than her husband.
Yeah, and so her and Iris, I think, had some really great dynamic character arcs throughout the season. And of course Iris gets to be a speedster, and and kind of like the whole season led her back to journalism and her love for writing, which is really nice to see.
Yeah. Yeah, they were a little late in circling back to it, but I liked the explanation they gave for why it took her so long.
Yeah.
As well as what inspired her to go back. The way they were talking about it, I thought they were gonna basically put it on pause after that episode and then come back to it next season. But instead, they did follow through with it in future episodes in the same season. Barry had, like, I don't think, like, people have been complaining about Barry's arc, but I don't think it was as bad as, say, Kara's. I think he was, like, just fine. He was just, like, a little bit in stasis. But it was nice to see him grow, you know, come out of Speed Force as a more enlightened being. and, which it did help him through jail, you know? Up to the point where he was in jail, and he was, like, you know, giving wise advice to Big Sur and helping him escape. And then you could say the turning point, or at least the turning point for me, was when he failed to save the Metas and he had to watch them all die. But the show didn't capitalize on that feeling of failure, and instead they shifted it to Ralph. So I guess you could say,
yeah.
I understand that Ralph was sort of like a way for him to offset that, and so then the failure with Ralph felt bigger, but I don't know that it translated well. Instead it was just like, why so much Ralph?
Yeah, I think Barry had, I agree with you, that he had a more interesting character arc throughout the season than most people gave credit for, because I think a lot of people had Ralph fatigue.
Yeah.
So either like Ralph fatigue, or they're also complaining, it's Iris' fault that Barry da-da-da-da-da. But honestly, I agree with you. Like, I think the jail arc, when he was in jail, was where Barry kind of hit his stride as far as the kind of leader and mentor that he wanted to be, because that's also when he had his Ralph pep talk. And then from there, and getting out and having all of this pressure on him,
mm-hmm.
of having to save these 13 lives, and everything that he does is not working. You're probably right that the Metas at the jail, that death was offset by, like, I can't focus on that right now because I still have to pick Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
It's compartmentalized in this part of his brain that, you know, this happened, but I can't get bogged down in that because there's still Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ralph is kind of just like, well, fuck. And then he, like, falls apart.
Yeah.
And it was there throughout the season. I think a lot of people kind of overlooked it or put too much emphasis on it being, like, because of Ralph or whatever. Mm. But I think it was, like, a continuous progression of Barry and what it means to be a leader and have to deal with that loss and, you know, trying to do it all.
Maybe Ralph being a series regular means that suddenly they will just make him stand around the Star Labs and do nothing, because that's what they do with their other regulars, and they ignore him for new people. Some silver lining.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Really, my hope is that the showrunner is being honest, that they're actually going to try to pair people up outside of Star Labs so that they can do their jobs. That's all I want.
That's how you make, like, continued relationships work that you've been waiting for really well. That's how, like, all of the, you know, sometimes when a show finally gets people together, and I would not say West Ellen has had this problem at all, but just, like, generally, the shows where then the ships happen and then the show keeps going, they can tread water sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the most successful combinations have been, well, they're together and they still have some cute scenes every couple episodes, but they're paired off with different people and they go off and do interesting things.
Like, yes.
I'm thinking of Mike Shirk, basically. We're talking about Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine for the most part.
Yes. But so that's exactly, that's the perfect formula to follow. Like, you get different rotations every episode, and you still have the one or two cute scenes. Like, there was one episode this season, I think it was 421, where they did actually have, like, different pairs. Joe and Caitlin, I think, was a pair, which was super, that was new and interesting. I was like, oh, that's different. And they still had their, like, opening Barry and Iris scene, and then the final, like, oh, the journalism worked. So I was like, this is exactly what I want. I just want, like, A and B plots for everybody. And then I still finally get a cute domestic scene, which I haven't had all season. So.
See, The new pair-ups can be great. Like, Harry and Cecile, everybody, like, low-key crack-ships it.
Yes.
They were actually really cute. Mm-hmm. Like, so you get more of that. More of that. Let, you know, Cisco interact with other people.
Yes.
Let the women interact with each other.
And now we have four women who can interact. So, look at that. Yeah. Leaps and bounds.
Other arcs. Cisco had a shit season. He had a win season, except he wasn't booted out at the final at the end of the season.
He had a win season, except Carla still needs a job, I guess. I feel like with Cisco, Cynthia was his strongest arc, but
yeah.
Season two was his best season because that's when he was like dealing with getting his powers.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, they haven't really gone anywhere with that.
Yeah.
I feel like with Caitlin, they just recycle the same story, so it's always feel like she has something because they just can't figure out what the origin of Killer Frost wants to be.
Uh-huh.
And that has its like frustrations as well, but it is a story and she did have one.
Yeah.
So which is more than Cisco can say.
And Joe had like a lessened presence, but he did have, you know, his arc of starting a new family with Cecile. So he was consistent, even if he was reduced. And Harry, I always forget about Harry, because I don't care about Harry, but he also had, like, a consistent arc.
Yeah, and despite the fact, like, I got kind of annoyed with him, because I felt like he was taking over Barry's villain a little bit, because for a stretch of episodes, it seemed like the Thinker was Harry's nemesis and not Barry's nemesis, but I think they kind of pulled it through at the end, losing his memories and learning, like, intelligence isn't everything, which I think sometimes, you know, the fan of me learn that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not just one way to be smart.
Yep.
I liked when they got into that half of his story because it became like a really more emotionally charged storyline.
I can see this.
And then there's Nora, because there's, you know, she's always fun.
Yeah, it is fun to speculate at least. At least it's like we're in a good place for season five.
Yes.
Now, Legends probably had the best Arrowverse season and second best DC show on the CW season. Angela, you did see some episodes of Legends.
I did. I watched the ones that sounded the most off the wall because that's what appeals to me. So I watched all the Bebo episodes.
Yay, Bebo! That was the greatest.
Yeah. So the Vikings episode was my favorite. So I watched that. I watched the finale. I watched the one with Constantine, the first one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was going to watch ones with Wally, but then you guys didn't seem to think that they introduced him very well.
Yeah, we were very offended by Wally's characterization in Legends. Not that... If you watch the one that, I think the one after his introduction, the one where basically he goes karaoke with Rip Hunter, nothing happens, but karaoke with Rip Hunter and Wally is great, so you should watch that one.
Okay.
But that was probably like the high point for him, because it was just weird. I don't know, the way that they treated Wally was so strange. Like, I'm not over the fact that they made him suddenly insecure about his intelligence and his science ability, because I was like, he's an engineer, I don't understand what's happening.
It's like they were trying to shove him in the Jax mold, but then it's like, why'd you get rid of Jax if you just wanted to write for Jax?
Yep.
I was like, it makes it look like you just think you can exchange one for the other, and that doesn't make you look very good.
Exactly.
Because it's not like it wasn't even like that they were introducing Wally West for the first time. Like, if this was DCTV's first Wally West, and even if DCTV's first Wally West is an engineer, but you want him to be insecure about his engineering, like, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a character. Be like the characters on Supergirl and go back and read all of Clark's article. Or call up, you know, the writer's room for The Flash and be like, hey, you're all probably in the same building.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how did you guys write Wally? Give me some characteristics that I can follow. But what did you think about the season overall, Jessica?
I would agree that it was the most fun season. And I think that there's a lot of great standalone episodes. They're a hot mess when it comes to plot narrative and a season-long plot because they just don't have one until the final end. So if you're looking for a consistent storyline from point A to point Z, that's not the show for you. But if you like to enjoy the ride along the way, then it's a fun show. Like, you're doing donuts in the parking lot, but you're having fun. You're like, you're not going anywhere, but you're having a lot of fun doing it.
So. Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about Legends. They had, like, some of my favorite episodes. I really liked the Helen of Troy episode. I thought that was fantastic. And, like, just some of the different eras that they go to. I think they pulled back on that a lot in the later half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Wally. But Damien Dark, I'm trying to get what I liked first. Damien Dark, Nora Dark, and Ray.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy. I hated Damien Dark before. He was just like the most annoying, one of the most annoying villains in the world, close to Malcolm Merlyn.
Yes.
Tied. But this season really brought out a different side of Damien, especially between like him and Nora, mm-hmm. and then you throw in Ray in there. So I really like that dynamic. Another standalone episode that I liked was Baby Ray's episode when they went to like the 80s.
Yes.
Nostalgia galore. Mm-hmm. That was the best. And the Dominator mom. So that was a really good one. But some of the things that I didn't like when they introduced Wally, because I just don't think they understood Wally at all. The Legends writers did. So they're trying to remold him into something fixable for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Legends is kind of like the island of misfit toys.
Yeah.
And Wally wasn't really a misfit in the way that the Legends tried to rewrite him into. They gave him all kinds of insecurity issues that didn't really exist or weren't really explored on The Flash, so it just kind of seemed like, and was like, you neglected Wally, we're gonna fix you, Wally, you're gonna be part of our family now. But then he's not part of your family.
Yeah, that's what's weird. It's like they were trying to justify his presence, like you're saying, but then they didn't actually give him an arc at the end. Like, it's like, I found myself, peace. So, yeah, it was weird. On the one hand, it feels like they already knew that that's what they wanted his arc to be, because his very last episode of The Flash, he suddenly was insecure. Not about engineering specifically, but about his place on the team, which would never been an issue before. Suddenly he was like, I feel like I'm out of place. I'm like, y'all don't need me. I'm gonna go now. And that was his whole arc on Legends. And then all he did was learn that he was needed, I guess. And I was like, and now he's off Legends. So I was like, why did this happen at all? This seems super unnecessary. He felt needed before this. So, anyway, that's just weird.
I mean, even if they, you know, because it sounds like they do need to write out, because Kenyon wants to do other stuff.
Yes.
Mostly. Have him pull, like, a Nightwing and just be like, you know, I feel like I'm not contributing enough in Star Labs. And even on Legends, there's, like, too many ships too crowded. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to a new city and do my thing in that city. Because he said it'll be an occasional episode.
Just
be like, look, I need to do my own thing. I'll be over here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but we'll still talk, obviously. Like, I don't know, you could do that. Like,
yeah.
And it would be fine. And that fits for anyone. I mean, it would have fit the little bit of Wally's character from the random episodes. Well, they're not random. They're the West Island episodes of The Flash you told me to watch, the previous seasons. But Wally's in some of those. So it seemed like it would be within his character to be like, I want to do my own thing. I want to be a hero. Even if the reason he leaves is like Joe and Iris are still like not. They were getting over it because they were Team Flash mm-hmm. beginning of season 4. So it seemed like they weren't being as protective
right.
of Wally anymore. But maybe with Barry back, they try to unconsciously slide back into those roles.
Mm-hmm.
And then Wally's like, look, guys, like, I'm an adult now. And I, you know, can do this all on my own. And I'm going to prove it to you and go somewhere else.
Yeah. Baby Bird has to fly away.
Yeah, exactly. Like, see? See?
With Legends, I really liked the season overall, so I don't really have, aside from Wally, clearly.
They underutilize some of their villains, like Kuasa.
Yeah.
Interesting story arc that could have been more in-depth between her and Amaya and Nate. You didn't really see enough of her, period.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more that could have been delved into that would have been more interesting than, you know, John Noble's voice being menacing from, like, a pond in the other dimension or something like that.
Yeah.
So.
Villain-wise, Nora and Dark were great, and their dynamic was great. And then everything else is kind of like...
It's kind of like...
Yeah. And character-wise, I think Zari probably had the best...
Yeah. Groundhog Day, yeah.
Yes.
That's another favorite.
Yeah, she had a really great introduction this season, and I felt like the show is, like, committed to her long-term. Sarah... I feel like last season, because it was all about her coming to terms with the fact that she couldn't avenge Laurel's death, so that was really strong last season, and this season they kind of, like, wavered up until they started making, like, going full force with Ava Lance, and then that was Sarah's kind of...
Sarah's lost in the beginning until they anchored her with Ava in the back half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't, like, I knew it was going to happen as soon as the first episode where Ava came on and they hated each other. I'm like, well, this is going to end in hate sex or something. So I was annoyed about it because I didn't really like Ava in the beginning. But mm-hmm. I think she's, her and Gary.
Her and Gary.
Like, grown on me a lot throughout the season. Another episode, standalone episode, was when the Vancouver episode, when they went to the future Vancouver.
And oh, right. And saw the clones.
Yeah, all, like, clone Avas. And I think a watershed episode for her, for me at least.
Yeah.
In terms of Ava as a character and my investment in what happens to her story coming up.
I would say one of the character lowlights, if you will, is, like, they crafted a really great exit for Stein, culminating in his death, which was, you know, somewhat disrespectful, but in terms of the character arc, it was respectful.
Yes.
And then all along, presumably, they knew that Jax was going to leave with him, and instead they waited until the very last second to come up with some reason for him to go. Because the episodes before that was like, what is Jax going to do without Stein? You know, how is he going to be prepared to take things on by himself? And then it was like, I feel useless, got to go. And everyone complains about how the Flash did that to Wally in the last second, but Legends did that to Jax in order to take Wally on. So
yeah, that was really stupid, actually, because like they spent all these episodes leading up to the crossover with Jax wondering, like, who is he without Stein? And they spent all this time, you know, developing confidence for Jax to be like, I can be okay, I can still be your hero. And then Stein dies, and he's like, yep, bye. What did you do all that for?
Yeah.
What did you build it up for to just, like, have him leave?
Ray had a lot of fun moments, but not really any particular through line, which is okay. Yeah. Like, neither did Nick. Sometimes that just happens.
Ray probably had a Jinx season because he got connected with the Nora.
That's true.
Damien line. But Nick had a season.
Yeah. And Nate's season was really just like hanging out with Amaya, but I liked him finally this season, which was not true last season.
Oh my god, he's so like he goes, there's a roller coaster of Nate emotions that I go through constantly throughout the season. If I can't stand him till, oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
He's like one of those Sour Patch Kids. Like, first he's really sour, and then he's like sweet. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So he's definitely in an interesting place for next season, because, like we said, the majority of the story is Amaya, and now it's going to be a new Amaya. Speaking of, what do we think of Amaya's story? Which I think was, like, probably the more complicated one of the season.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably the accurate way to describe it, as complicated. And again, I feel like if there was more Kuasa, it would have felt more heavy or in-depth. Also, you know, them running out of ways to mention Mari without showing Mari, because they can't use the actress who plays Mari. So
yes.
My story got a little bit repetitive, or I have to go back. Oh, but I love him. Oh, but I don't want to love him. And I have to go back. And it's kind of like, one thing that I could not figure out, why they couldn't figure out, is why the person that Amaya is supposed to be with to have her future kids and grandkids couldn't be Nate. Like, they were all, like, angsty over the fact that we can't be together because you have to go back to 1942. But what if Nate was always supposed to go back to 1942 and they were supposed to be together anyway?
Right.
And, like, they never even had that as, like, a
possibility.
What if? Or, like, talked about it on the show.
Yeah, you'd think at the very least they would have tested and then discarded it.
Yeah. Tested that theory out. Like, you know, of course, once you see Amaya's daughter, you're like, there's no way that Nate is her father. But before then, like, there's...
When she does go back.
Yes.
That was a good episode for her. I think it's going to be interesting that I think this is the first time that women will outnumber men, based on what it seems like there's going to be 6 women and 4 men, so...
That's awesome.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It'll be quite...
try to tune in. I want to find dubious sites to watch it on.
Dubious sites?
Although I'll have to wait. I mean, it'll be on Netflix, but not the end of the year. So
right.
I want to, like, watch new episode. I don't know how that's going to work for us.
Yeah. You know what would work, probably? US TV Now, which is a site for Americans abroad.
Perfect.
Now we have our lovely Black Lightning.
Yay!
Yay! I thought it was great.
I did too. I think it had a pretty strong first season, and maybe had it had a couple of slow episodes, but for the most part, I think that for a new show, it did really well, really strongly, and it left a kind of a good place. There's enough, like, mystery and intrigue going into season 2 that I think that it's in a good place. The family dynamics are really strong between Jefferson and Lynn, and between both parents and their daughters. All of them feel like really full, fleshed out characters. And of course, I mean, it's written by Black people for Black people. And so there's a lot of, like, respect and care there. And it feels really authentic. Like, I was a little bit kind of, it was almost like too black in the pilot, because it's like they're trying to fit in so much stuff in the pilot. Like, if nothing else, if you get nothing else, you never watch another episode of the show, you know it's a black show. So I like it kind of mellowed out. Mm-hmm. In the rest of the season, didn't hit you over the head so hard, but it kept that authenticity, which I liked.
Angela, did you watch Black Lightning?
I did watch all of Black Lightning. Black Lightning was amazing. Really, the only complaint I have about Black Lightning is still, we complained about this, I think in private a while ago, that they killed off two of the most interesting female characters in one episode.
Yep.
And there's no hints that they're back. And I actually think they're doing really interesting things with bringing Lala back, but it does make me want to be like,
bring them back.
Where are the other? I mean, I would say Tobias was conspicuously absent for a number of episodes after Tori died.
Yeah.
But on the one hand, because they had established so well that he really loved his sister. Mm-hmm. So he was just, you could say he was mourning and plotting. But I'm holding out hope, especially since he was like, I brought you back to Lala. Holding out hope he was like working on that for Tori.
Yes.
As well.
I mean, I guess he wouldn't bring back Lady Eve, but maybe someone who doesn't like him could bring back Lady Eve.
Yes, I want Lady Eve back, but yeah Tobias is not going to do that.
Right.
So.
It's got to be someone else.
Lady Eve was like, she was just really incredible, compelling, strong female villain, mm-hmm. which you don't really see a lot of in the Arrowverse or probably the DC TV verse, really, much at all. She's really strong and really compelling. So I hope they find a way to, like, resurrect her. Lala, another really compelling villain that they did bring back.
Yeah.
And I think he actually got more interesting as the undead than mm-hmm. when he was. And then, of course, Tobias Well. And the really complex nature with him and him being albino and how that plays into his worldview, especially within the scope of also being a black man, being an albino black man. So he's internalized hatred for black society mm-hmm. because the way that he was made to feel ostracized because of his skin color and his condition. And they played into that and they explained it and they used that. So I thought that was really, really well done, because I know it's like that in the comics, that he's albino, but a lot of times in media, people that are albino are portrayed as, like, you know, villains.
Mm-hmm.
So I like they gave him that extra depth and layers.
Mm-hmm.
The only villains that I didn't like were white people.
Yes, they were.
ASA and the whole, like, fake Donald Trump wannabe, make America great again bullshit.
Right.
I hate that that's where we are in society, because that, you know, either it's fake news or making America great again or some kind of, like, I mm-hmm. hate that that's, like, the marker of our society, that phrase keeps, like, popping up on TV shows. We didn't really learn much about the ASA, and I felt like he was too literal mm-hmm. racist.
Yeah.
When I think that they could have gone a little more subtle racist,
mm-hmm.
and that would have been more scary in a sense.
I loved it. Like, I love the family dynamics, and I love that they spent, like, the first half sort of developing Anissa as a hero, and then they did give the back half to sort of Jennifer's different story, you know, because at first I was like, why can't they just do them together? Why is Jennifer getting pushed to the side while Anissa's doing hers? And it's because they had a different arc for Jennifer, right? She was not embracing heroism. So it made sense to sort of, it made sense to split them and to show, like, that different people are going to have different reactions, you know, and are going to feel differently, and not everyone wants to be out there punching bad guys.
And I hope that her acceptance of her powers mm-hmm. doesn't lead her into donning a suit, necessarily.
Right.
I mean, as much as I want to see that, then that would sort of waste her whole character arc. Like, I think it works really well when she's like, I don't want any of this at all.
Mm-hmm.
But then when she's under the stress, like, obviously she needs it. Mm-hmm. But I would love it to be like, I have these powers, I'm going to use them. When my immediate family is in danger, they're like our failsafe. Or whatever,
right.
But I'm still not interested in being out there.
Every
which
day.
Which is also a very teenager thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm not going to run around like that.
And it would be unfair to ask her to give up her life to do that. Especially because she's someone whose life we've actually gotten to glimpse. Like, poor Anissa. Yeah. I forgot after a while, like, what does she do? You know, like, what is her job? What
she's,
is her...
Apparently she's a med student and still has time for all of this.
Yeah, so I'm like...
She's a med student and a health teacher.
Yeah.
And she's vigilante. And I was like, don't med students not sleep? Like, don't they not even have time to do that? Like...
So yeah, that's a little bit, like, they can decide maybe what Anissa actually does when she's not superheroing. That's fine. The other quibbles are either keep Chenoa around longer.
Yes!
Or... have Grace more, because it was just kind of like, oh, hello, and then after episode 4 you wouldn't even know that Anissa liked girls.
Yeah, that is one of the other main kind of complaints or quibbles that I have about it as well, because I feel like as the first season, they wanted to give people a taste of, if you renew us, this is what you could get in two. So I get that part. And the way that I'm explaining it is they probably wanted to give people a taste, and they also wanted to set up a whole bunch of other stuff, and so there was just not enough time to do that and to do Anissa's love life as well, when they still had, you know, all the other, they right. still had Jennifer's story, like that it took them forever to get to. But there was no real reason, even if you introduced Grace, why Anissa and Chinua had to break up after, like, an episode.
They got too overexcited in introducing her too early. Mm-hmm. I feel like they could have introduced her the way they introduced her at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a lot better.
I totally agree. And because there was no reason to cut off the Chenoa relationship that quickly.
It was night and day from one episode to yeah. another one. It, like, they seemed really healthy and together and respectful. And then the next episode, she was, like, super jealous. And I was like, where did this come from?
Yeah. So that was a little strange. Like, they could have actually fizzled out because Anissa's so focused on heroism.
You could have sat with that some more. And at least it didn't really make sense for her to be around for an episode just to break up, for them not to pull the trigger on Thunder Grace. And then there was that time when she called Grace, and then we never got to see anything that comes out of that call.
It haunts me. It keeps me up at night. Why did she call her?
Those are only quibbles. But yeah. God, yeah, overall, it was so good. Mm-hmm. It's such a nice new type of superhero dynamic mm-hmm. that we haven't really seen, I would say, period, but especially on TV.
Yeah.
Like this, like, he's older, but it's not just the, old retired hero comes back out of, like, I don't know, it still manages to avoid that because they make his family such a huge part of his daily life and not just his motivating factor.
Yes, and we get to, like, see so much of him as a hero as Jefferson Pierce, too, and, like, the parallel.
Mm-hmm.
That Jefferson Pierce is a hero to the students, to his family, to the community, and then there's Black Lightning, who's like Black Jesus.
I'm going to have to see if my dad watched it, because he watches DC TV sometimes. Like, it's funny, he's had this complaint since Smallville, and I remember, like, when Smallville was airing on the WB, before it was even the CW, and I was in high school, or even middle school, and he would complain about all the romantic drama, and I just remember being like, Dad, it's Teenagers Network, like, we're trying to watch the superhero stuff, there's gonna be, and so he still complains about that, and sometimes he'll drop a show if he thinks the ratio of superhero to romance, like, romance is too high. But I was gonna be like, Dad, you should watch Black Lightning, like, you would relate to Black Lightning a lot more, like, here you go, watch that scene.
Do it.
And the music, like, the soundtrack, yes. and everything, so good. So good.
I agree. Another great thing about it is that you don't have to watch anything else to watch it. You know, you don't have to feel like you need to connect back to any other DC TV shows.
And that's the way they plan to keep it.
Yes. Fingers crossed.
Hopefully.
Uh-huh. And then we have, last and probably least, Arrow! At this point, the only reason I watch Arrow, now that, you know, Quentin is fucking dead and Thea left to follow her path of justice but also be with Roy, except Roy's coming back next season, so thanks for nothing. So the only reason I watch is the newbies, and everyone hates the newbies, so I'm, like, definitely going against the grain here.
I watched the series premiere of Arrow.
The series premiere?
This is, like, bargain bin Batman.
Yep.
Which I'm not here for. I don't really read very many comics at all, but I was really into the animated Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is not who the Green Arrow is.
Right.
From what I know from that. And I tried to watch the episodes where they introduced Barry as a character, because I knew I'd want to watch The Flash some, and I couldn't even get through them. I was like, I'm really bored, right? I think it wasn't about Barry, it was because I'm randomly trying to watch a mid-season episode of The Arrow.
Right.
And there's all, like, queen family boardroom drama or something. Mm-hmm. going on, and I didn't care.
The season,
and they had a great opener.
Mm-hmm.
The season opener was great. It had a great cliffhanger.
Yep.
On Off Being Exposed. They had a sucky first third, and even suckier second third.
Yep.
And then a disaster of a third third. I think it's not really, like, a lot of big good moment chunks. I feel like there's a mess in each part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
The first season, they had, like, the fake out big bad.
Yep.
With
Caden James.
Awful. God, he was awful.
I think the only good part of him was those flashbacks to his son in that episode where he died. And then it was pointless.
I never watched Lost, but I know that a lot of people were really excited because, like, the guy that plays Caden James was really big on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like they wasted him if that that's the best that they were going to do with King James. And then King James was even the actual big bad at all.
Right.
Another person that they wasted was Amanda Watson.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that she was amazing, and she came in, like, you know, just like the head bitch in charge, and was, she had everybody's number, and she wouldn't take any shit from Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes down the indictment, and all of a sudden she disappears. Like,
yeah.
You're not going to see your case through. Like, why would you? And then she, I mean, she comes back at the end, but there's like so much stuff in the middle where, mm-hmm. you know, it would have been nice to have her as like some extra pressure. The whole old Team Arrow versus new Team Arrow, I feel like, I mean, I understood new Team Arrow because I'm not, like, partially biased to original Team Arrow.
Yeah, I feel like we were one of the, some of the few people who actually watched it the way that the writers had intended it. With, like, oh.
Yes, exactly.
Here's a seesaw of two different sides.
They didn't understand their fan base, I guess. They didn't really set it up as well for people that do have that bias to original mm-hmm. Team Arrow to see both sides. So it just wound up making new Team Arrow, like, pretty much hated.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, objectively, if you're looking at it the way that the writers intended you to look at it, that's one good thing about the season, I think, is the kind of family bond that you see develop between Dinah, Curtis, and Renee, especially when they break off
mm-hmm.
and develop their own kind of unit, I thought was really, really nice.
I agree.
And then another bright spot, I would say, is with Black Siren and Quentin. And it starts out a little bit like Misery, because Quentin's like a little bit intense with his
yes.
determination to, to turn Black Siren into New Laurel.
Yes.
It's a little creepy.
Poor Quentin.
They had like relationship development arc. And I thought that Katie Cassidy did a really nice job with Earth 2 Laurel and her deciding for herself. And I think it's, you know, it's fine that if she doesn't want to be completely good Laurel or the same Laurel as Earth 1. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice that, I think it's actually nice that she is still a little bit, what would you call her, like a chaotic neutral?
Yeah.
She doesn't care one way or the other.
Yeah, she just does what she thinks is going to benefit her in the moment. And by the end of the season, protecting her dad is what would benefit her.
Is what she wanted to do.
Yes.
And I like that. And I hope that she keeps that kind of spirit as integral to her character, because that's just making a more interesting character at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy her. I thought, I mean, Oliver and Felicity had kind of a weird, you know, part of their arc, I think, was really interesting with them becoming a family with William. But there's a lot of, like, other weird stuff where it mm-hmm. just seemed like Oliver treated her more like his employee than his partner that I had issue with, and mm-hmm. the fact that they didn't even touch, like, platonically a lot of the time.
Yeah, it was a very strange, I don't know, because it's weird because I feel like it seems like Steven is really enthusiastic about Felicity off-screen and working with Emily, but on-screen, I would not be able to tell.
Yeah. So that was kind of odd. And then in their final scene, the fact that, you know, he didn't get up, it seemed really, really odd for that to be the last scene between them before he goes to jail.
Yeah.
And they don't kiss, they don't really touch or hug or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whereas on the flip side, I think you see throughout the season how important William is to Oliver. And how that has made him grow and mature as a character. So I think William was, like, a plus side for Oliver. And then, whereas Felicity still was, like, the negative side in that he was not treating her the way that she would warrant being treated after 5+ seasons.
Yes, I would agree with that. And she felt a little bit lost. Like, she felt a little bit overall, not just to Oliver, but in terms of the writers as well. It felt like she's put on the back burner a mm-hmm. lot of the season. They even brought in her doppelganger, who I hate.
Whatever, Elena.
Yeah, I hate her either way. To do Felicity's job, basically. So, and you know, the company that she's supposed to have with Curtis that never really got off the ground this season. For a while, a long time, it seemed like Dinah was the leading lady mm-hmm. in the way that writers treated her, wrote her, gave her stories. She had strong B plots. So she was another individual character that had a pretty big season this season, especially like her going head to head with Oliver as well, like leader of OTA versus leader of NTA.
Yeah.
It seems like Dinah more so than Felicity is important lady in the writer's room. So it'll be interesting to see if that continues and what that means. They find something for Felicity to do.
Yeah, we got a pretty different writer's room for this coming season.
Yeah,
so.
I'm jealous. I'm jealous for the Flash. they get a pretty diverse. They have a black woman, they have a black male, they have another woman of color, I believe, on there.
Yeah, they have two. Looks like they have two Asian female writers.
Yeah, and so they get, you know, all of that diversity, and the Flash writers have fart jokes. And that's it.
Sigh.
Lame fart jokes. This is why you need diversity in your writer's room, people.
To avoid fart jokes. But yeah, so because of that, I think that we could safely say, like, skip season 6 of Arrow and just begin fresh with 701 and see if you want to continue.
Yeah, oh, well, like, the main, he's even worse than Kate and James.
Oh,
but,
God.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The absolute worst.
Yeah.
He is so annoying, and unfortunately, he did not die, so we are still stuck with him in season 6.
He better get killed off in the first episode of season 7.
I don't, like, if the Quadrant is supposed to be the big bad for season 7, I don't really know how they do that when he killed, like, 3/4 of the Quadrant.
That's true.
Season 6.
That's true.
So he's, like, the last remaining quarter. But other than that, I feel like the fact that Oliver did go to jail and he did add himself as a Green Arrow, so we're moving into more comic book territory with, hopefully, what we believe is Emiko Queen will come on to the show. You've got Roy coming back. I don't know how he's going to explain that, since he's supposed to be riding Opposite Sunset with Thea, mm-hmm. and Thea's not coming back, so we'll see how that goes. But there's a lot of, like, things to look forward to in season 7, so that's good.
Fingers crossed that it all comes to fruition in a way that we like.
Because we're supposed to be deciding if Valerie wants to undrop DCTV. So I would say Black Lightning is a definite watch.
Mm-hmm.
Flash is, despite the problems with it this season, I would say it's a watch if you care about the characters.
Yes.
Because really great things do happen, both good for them and then just good for character development generally. Yes. I would say Supergirl, maybe don't go back and watch this season, but you could be cautiously optimistic about
next season.
Next season.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Legends.
Yes. Well, she hates Legends. Too. That's the problem. Like, okay, so she definitely doesn't care about the characters.
Other people out here, Legends is a watch. Like,
yes.
That. It's just goofy, but don't take it too seriously. But just have fun. And Constantine showing up, and he's really fun.
Yeah.
And then don't watch Arrow.
Black Lightning and Legends were the best of CW's DC shows this season. Thoroughly enjoyable. There's some problems, but just, like, there's problems with anything, you know? So it's all good. And then Flash, as long as you care about the characters, then there's a lot of good in there, despite the bad.
Season 5 looks really exciting.
Yes, and season 5, we've obviously got, you know, Wes Allen's baby girl, Nora, is going to be a regular as well. So this will be the first time that the people of color outnumber the white people.
That was the Flash season 4 premiere. The first 20 minutes were glorious.
Yeah.
I was like, look at this chance, Flash! This is amazing! This is what I wanted!
Yes, and then they took it away. But yeah, but this time it'll be back. So hopefully they've got some more diversity behind the scenes as well to write that appropriately. But we'll see. Anyway, and then Supergirl. If you care about the character, don't watch this season, but be ready for next season. And Arrow, just don't. Arrow might be in the same boat as Supergirl because Mark Guggenheim is gone and Beth Schwartz is the showrunner now. I'm ready I'm ready to see what y'all are doing. Even their Twitter is different now. It's clearly being run by someone a lot funnier than before.
If you could ever care about Arrow, maybe try it out. Maybe I'll just start for, I'll be like, show me what's happening.
Exactly. So 701, don't even go back. Just see where it takes you. And that concludes our DCTV update. Jessica will now abandon us so that Angela and I can talk K-dramas. So what are you watching, Angela? What are you watching?
Oh, my general. I finished watching it, and because I'm going to visit my family next weekend, started a new drama. So that's why I'm just rewatching bits of Reply 1988. Makes me happy. Since you were talking about it so much, and I was like, oh, I picked an episode because I wanted to watch the, like, shippy moment in it, but then I just got distracted by that episode is heavy on, like, Sunwoo and his mom.
Yes!
So then...
Yes, that's the thing about Reply 1988. Like, as much as I, like, super ship Duxon and Tech, I really love that ship, but there's so much more going on. Like, the romance is really barely register in the grand scheme of things. Because, like, yes, every episode is basically a movie. It's, like, 90 minutes to 2 hours, which is insane. But I didn't feel it when I was watching it because there were so, like, there's so many characters that get so much development. And then we get to see all those different interpersonal dynamics, you know, like, with the Ajumas and, like, their friendship with each other. And then, of course, the individual families, how those parents interact, how they interact with their kids.
Community. How they interact with other people's kids. Like, yeah. Duxon and Jean-Claude's father are adorable.
Yes, and I love that honestly, so much.
My probably my saddest ship feels for Jean-Claude is the, like, missed Duxon getting to be.
Right, the daughter-in-law to... Yes, like that was the only reason for me to root for that. But
family dinners, but we saw them. That, you know, asshole mm-hmm. sitting there hiding his smiles, whereas Tyke actually smiles at her. I'm like,
yes,
you smile at her when she and father or your father were cracking you up. You could have not hit that. And
right?
Then,
yeah.
It
does give you a good lesson too. You know, like you have to take opportunities when you have them. You have to be honest about your feelings. Otherwise, no one's gonna know about your feelings, and no one's gonna. You know, he was like the total opposite of most male leads, where it's just like, just stop. She doesn't like you. Get over it. And this one was like, well, you're never going to fucking know if she likes you or not, because you didn't even get in the race, you dummy.
Yeah, well, that's how you know he's a second male lead, because that's what the second male leads do. A lot of the time, they're just like, I shall love her. That daddy long legs concept.
Ugh, yeah.
But generally how they, because he doesn't, you know, John Carl doesn't do a lot for her.
Right, yeah.
But usually it's the, I'm not going to say anything about my feeling. I'm just going to, like, look after you from afar and do stuff for you.
But I have to say, the way that they wrote the mystery of who the husband is and how it ends up being Tack, I think this was, like, the best one of all the replies that I've seen so far. Like, I'm literally, my mind is blown by all the, like, little ways that they did it. Because, like, first, obviously, just the concept, the fact that she's being interviewed. So, obviously, the interviews are for someone who is famous that would require interviews. Like, literally
sure,
the only person.
Why would they be interviewing? Well, no, I mean, maybe.
Right. You could assume because someone... became famous, like she became famous, or...
Well, they say then that Jean-Claude's older brother is the most famous one.
Right, so it could have been him. Now. Right. Like, someone else became famous, but for most
that's
of the series...
That's not obvious as the show was going on, though.
Like, yeah.
The only obvious famous one until the end is Tyke.
Yeah. And then in the second episode, like, the second episode was when I was like, I think that Tack might be the husband, like, even though in the first episode, he's literally in, like, one scene, like, there's no, like, you didn't even think about him. It was between Sun-Woo and Jung-Hwan. And poor Dong-Ryan was never in the running. But in the second episode, when she's talking about the flashback, she literally describes how Tack came to the neighborhood and how the four of them became five. And then going back, like, I wouldn't have known this when I watched, because I watched 88 before 94. But in the second episode of 97, Siwon, like, there's a flashback between how Siwon met Yoon-jae. And in 94, the flashback is how Na-jung met Trash. So it's like, they give it away in episode two. They tell you which one it is.
I think the ship wars got really nasty in 94, so maybe this time the writers were like, oh, I mean, we're still going to have our conceit, but we're going to, like...
Like, yeah, we're going to make it, even though people still didn't get it. Like, it's a, even... And I didn't... Obviously, I didn't come up with this on my own, because I don't know shit about Go. I don't know Baduk. I don't even know how you say Baduk.
Yeah, it's Baduk. I think the emphasis... I don't know. Okay.
Well, I'm going to call it Go. And I'm going to say, like... So his name... Chwatak Sixtan, right? Because he's got his handicap is six. Like, the other player, the opponent, has to put down six stones before he can make his first move, because that's how good he is, in order to even the playing field. And then in episode six is when he actually asks her out. I was like, oh my god! And the whole episode, right? It's Jung-Hwan being worried because he thinks Sun-Woo likes Duxon. But then we find out that Sun-Woo likes Bora. I felt so bad for her. But meanwhile, in the background, there's Tack playing his competition. And they're all like, oh, there's no way he's going to win. It's his first time in a competition this big. There's too many opponents. And Dong-Ryan will, like, randomly talk to me. He'll be like, do you think that Tack can beat everyone? I don't know how he could possibly be the last one standing. And then the final scene is when he calls and he's like, let's go to a movie. And I was like, oh my god, I can't believe this. The
I
meta.
I did not pick up on that. I love writing like that.
Yeah.
I love writing like that.
So, anyway, I really love it. I really love that so much. And that's probably why, like, aside from Park Bo-gum's face being so good at expressing emotions, that I literally am in shock. I can't believe it. But the way that they wrote it also is makes me more excited for it.
Male leads expressing emotions well with their face is what I loved so much about Just Between Lovers. But
yes.
It takes a lot to smile, which Kendu is not allowed to do. So, who wins that one?
Oh my god. I also really liked Hiri. Like, I saw a lot of people being like, oh, she's not very good, or she's, you know, inexperienced. And I guess, like, that's true, but I feel like it worked for Duxon. Because she's like...
character. People are always harshest on the... I mean, there's K-pop actors everywhere in K-dramas, but predictably the women get less criticism.
Mm-hmm.
So, people are out... Yeah, she wouldn't work in any role, but this role is perfect for her.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's really good. I haven't seen anything else that she's done because she was in some other show. Everybody says isn't any good. And then
I know she's in Two Cops, or she was in Two Cops very recently, but I've never.
Two Cops, I have. I was like, she's too much younger than I adore Jo Jung-suk, and my like dimples kid is in that. But I was like, no. I was like, this doesn't work for me. I'm not gonna watch you. I am watching Jo Jung-suk. I haven't finished it because it's just a movie. It's on Amazon Prime. It's called My Love, My Bride, and it's like a new married couple romantic comedy starring Jo Jung-suk and Shin Min-ah.
Oh, okay.
And it seems really cute so far. And yeah, it's only 90 minutes. I started it like late last night. And
oh, okay. Stuff, like, you haven't been watching for that long. Like, no, I've been trying to get through this 90-minute movie for two weeks.
No, I watched like the first 20 minutes and then it was like, I don't know, I got distracted looking at houses in Germany. And then I haven't gone back.
Yeah.
I was going to watch it sometime. So, plug for that because it's probably just going to be cute.
Yeah.
But I was like, I like these two actors. They seem like they'd be cute together. So...
So you obviously watched all of Just Between Lovers, and I'm finally making my way, now that I've gone through all the replies, I'm finally making my way back to the dramas I was watching before the replies. So I just finished episode 9 of Just Between Lovers, and I really like...
That's a pain episode.
Yeah, it was full of pain. I was so upset. I was like, why is he doing this to me? Gyeongdu being all like, oh no, you just have to be with this other CEO rich guy, because he's obviously better for you. But I did love that she was like, you know, who are you to say who I should be with or who I should spend time with? I'm going to like who I like. And right now I don't like you because you said that. So I guess you got what you wanted. I was like,
well, she was always attracted to Gyeongdu over the CEO because she felt that like on a soul level, they knew each other better. Like they had had this thing happen to them. And it wasn't even that they were in the one tragedy together, but she recognized somebody who's putting on this face.
Yeah.
But you know, but at the same time, like, he's at least allowing himself to experience it, and her whole family is trying to pretend none of this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how they're dealing with it, and they want her to live a normal life, and so that's why it's so mean of Gyeongdu to be like, go live a normal life.
But yeah.
Like, no, she loved you because...
Exactly, she wants to be able to be open and have someone who understands her, you know, and who she can actually talk about her pain with.
The comedic scene they had that showed that really well that was cute was when they go to the amusement park.
Yes!
And they're walking across the bridge to the roller coaster and they're like, why would people pay to do this?
That actually reminds me, I saw a gift set that I really loved that it was like, there's two kinds of people and it was like the Secretary Kim, What's Wrong Secretary Kim amusement park scene and the Jessie Jean Lovers amusement park scene, because obviously she's like, ah! And then he's like, and then Jessie Jean Lovers are like, this is dumb.
That, and I am the Just Between Lovers people. We went to a big amusement park in North Carolina with John's sister, and it was like the kiddie coaster. I mean, not the really little where you're barely doing anything. Like, there are some ups and downs. Mm-hmm. We took the 4-year-old on it, and I was like, I did not enjoy this. Like, this is the kiddie coaster. But I was like, you know, it's good to remind myself, because they were about to go off on all the big coasters. I was like, it's good to remind myself that I don't care that I'm going to take the child and not go on these big coasters. This is my preferred.
This is what you like. You gotta follow your heart. You gotta follow your heart.
Yep.
Now, you're still watching Life on Mars, right? Or did you not continue after? You
didn't watch the first episode so we could talk about it, but no, I won't.
All right.
I don't want to watch it right now.
Well, you're being good.
I almost did doing Jo Jung-ho for Weekend K Drama Crush. I was like, oh, I want to see what's happening. But there's no word about where it's going to air here.
Oh, really? Still?
I haven't seen anything.
Well, I will say that I thought, like, I really liked the first episode. I remember we talked about it. And then episodes 2 and 3, I was like, I don't know how I'm feeling right now. But then episode 4, I really liked. I really liked the case for episode 4. I thought it was really interesting. And then I liked that I feel like we're finally getting a little bit of development on him in this new world and actually trying to, like, you know, put down roots in this world and not necessarily just be focused on how he's going to get out. So my only, if I had, like, a big issue with it, is that, like, and probably just my issue with cop dramas in general, you know, like, I'm not gonna root for cops to get to do things like beat up the criminal, right? Or, like, use, like, whatever, unfair questioning techniques and stuff. And so I'm like, I would like him to be a little bit more aggressive about telling them that they're wrong, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's even in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and a great episode with Sterling K. Brown.
Yes.
But then they've been in there for, like, 12 hours, and I'm like,
right.
I love you, but...
Exactly. Like, it's always, like, because, especially, like, you can turn your brain off when it's not in the news every day, you know? But Now, in the environment that we're in, that we know how bad cops can be and how they can, like, break their own laws and then get away with it. It's not fun to watch when it's happening on screen.
Yeah, and I mean, that would totally work in Life on Mars if, like, he was fighting against it more.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully, like, we'll see that.
Like, because it was the 80s, and, you know, that's how they did. He comes in, he's like, no. And there were bits of that in the British one, too.
Yes.
Well, I don't think specifically about that, but just generally about, like, this isn't good cop practices.
Right.
Gene being, like, what is this dude's problem? Like, come in here, try to tell me what to do.
Yes.
Like, this wet behind the ears. Yeah,
yeah, there's, like, a, like, little bit, like, there's definitely the pushback from the captain, but he, the main character, isn't doing as much as I would. Like, I want him to do more to push back against.
Has he accepted that he is in the past yet?
I think he's still kind of like, it could be a coma, or it could be this, or it could be that. But I think that because of Officer Yoon, it's really that he's like, okay, well, I'm not gonna just give up, or, like, not gonna, like, try to die in order to get out.
He's not pushing that hard.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I'm not convinced this is real.
Right.
So I'm not,
no, that's really true. He definitely does do that. He'll be like, y'all are just figments of my imagination, so, like, whatever. And then it's like, is your imagination this detailed? No, it's not. Please. So anyway, it's definitely interesting, but it's not like I'm easy, right? As long as there's, like, super cute romance and comedy, then I'm, like, on board. So What's Wrong with Secretary Kim is currently stealing my heart. I guess it's, like, what, it's been 6 episodes? Yeah, it's been 6 episodes. And the chemistry between Park Seo-joon and Park Young-min, right? Yes, I love them. Their chemistry is perfect. Even though it's high-key sexual harassment in the workplace, like, because he's her boss. And he's, like, doing all these things to get her to not quit. And I'm like, but because she's very, like, she is receptive to the things that he's doing. And he's so, like, a bumbling idiot. Like, he's not trying to make sexual things happen. So it's, like, it doesn't feel, like, really icky like it would in any other situation. So, but they're super cute. And I probably never hated a second lead more than I hate the second lead in this one, just because I'm like, why are you interrupting this cute moment? All you're going to do is prolong the story for 10 episodes. Go away. So
that's how I felt about the crazy cousin and Oh My General, that, you know, if you keep going, I just met her.
Just
started getting cute, and then crazy cousin's going to come in, and then, like, their relationship, like, it strains their relationship, and I'm like, get out of here with your poisoning people.
Yes, I already see that. Like, I just finished episode 15 of Oh My General, because I was editing a podcast that was, like, 3 hours long, so I was like, let me watch Oh My General silently while I edit the podcast, since I can't hear the dialogue anyway because the music is so loud. So I watched 3 episodes in a row while I was editing, and we met the cousin. I was immediately like, get out of here. And he immediately was like he seemed like he was attracted to the cousin, and then, like, they, like, had, like, a little weird, like, stare off while he was, like, looking at that sexy book of ladies. Then I was like, is this inspired by the cousin? What is happening? I'm so... But, you know, there's
still... Yeah, I think it's that she wants to be with... She never wants to have to leave Zhao.
Right.
So she's like, if I can be your concubine, then I'll never have to leave, and maybe I can, like, make something happen here. Like, if I have the time... Because Zhao's like, I'm gonna find you a husband. Like, that's my job. And so she's trying to, like... That's why she ruins her reputation. And then, like, puts it out that, like, yeah, I don't know. It was just, they actually do better things with her character.
Later on?
Very. That's in the 40s.
And you liked how Oh My General ended.
Yes, it was cute. The only thing that I didn't like is that there were some plot threads that I wanted to see more of wrapped up. Especially with 6 episodes, you could have tightened your ship a little bit more and had time to revisit. So the one bodyguard gets married to Fox.
Yes.
But the other bodyguard... Somewhere in the 30s or the 40s, sort of has this flirtation with, like, a kind of, like, lowly soldier, and the dad doesn't like that because, like, he's not, like, high enough ranked. And that soldier's like, I want to be a scholar. Just you see, like, I'll be a scholar. And then that never goes anywhere. And
I'm
like,
sad.
Like, yeah, I was expecting that they would come back to that. Even the final scene, the very final scene is them as, like, grandparents. It's adorable. the very final scene calls back to that painting that she saw.
From the very beginning. Yeah, that was clearly of him, right?
Kids are looking at that, and so the scene before that is them as grandparents, so that's really, really, really painfully adorable.
That's cute.
The scene before that is, like, So the war is over, and they've gone back to, like, their palace, and they're, like, attending upon the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, handing out the rewards to everybody for, like, doing well, and, like, Zhao never gets, she doesn't get anything.
Oh.
And it's not even, like, it's not even, like, he's, like, Zhao, you don't get anything. It's just, like, the scene ends. Like, Yujin gets his reward. Fox and the old general dude and some other people that you don't haven't met yet, they get rewards. And then Yujin gets his reward, and then the scene ends.
That's weird.
And, like, and he's really cute with Zhao in that scene. Like, they're making kissy faces at each other, mm-hmm. which is, like, not appropriate for court, but everybody's just like, oh.
Aww.
So it's really cute. But I'm like, okay, well, doesn't she get anything? Like, she's safe? Like,
maybe
she's
like
pregnant, and she saved you.
Because she already saved, you know, she already saved the country that already was. Well, she was already decorated and rewarded. Exactly. I was being terrible at first. I was like, this is like Mulan. And I was like, just because it's a woman dressed as a man who saves China does not mean it's like Mulan. Stop, Tatiana. But
we're bad. Even the fight scene, the final fight scene where they beat, like, mm-hmm. the other prince,
mm-hmm.
Is really good because they kind of fight together because, like, she's pregnant and, like, kind of sick.
Oh.
She can't do, like, as well as, like, she's not, like, up to her heart. He, right. like, the fray with her and is fighting with her, but he's obviously way outmatched. So just, like, the way that they even choreograph it to make it that, like, she helps him and he helps her, and they together,
mm-hmm.
like, none of them on their own would have been able to defeat this guy because of where they, because she's sick and he's not that good.
Aww.
But, like, together, they defeat him. It's really adorable.
I love that. I love partnership, you know?
Those are the cutest moments of the drama.
Yeah.
They get stuff together and they get to, like, solve cases together and do other stuff like that together.
It's really cute.
And that comes and goes. That, like, wanes and rises and wanes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was cute, but it's long.
It's long. It is long, but I'm a fourth of the way through it. I'm so proud of myself. Speaking of partnership, I feel very bad that I put off watching While You Were Sleeping for so long because I can't stand Lee Jong-suk's face. So I'm sorry, Lee Jong-suk. If I ignore your face, I really like it.
Those three are my number one OT3 in K-dramas, I think.
Yeah, they were so great together, and I'm like, I'm a little, I'm like, I don't want him to be in love with her. I'm like, Wu-Tok. I don't want Wu-Tok to be in love with her because then it's going to be sad because I love him so much and I love them as a trio. So I don't want to, no fighting, just working.
They do it pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they reference it every so often and you're sad, but it's not. He never broods about it for too long. So they don't give a lot of second leads. They have, like, their long, sad, sorrow scenes. It doesn't dwell in it very much.
Oh, that's good.
And I think that helps. And the fact that they all kind of acknowledge, she never figures it out.
Okay.
But she figures it out, and he's not too assy about it. Like,
oh, that's good.
Because Wu-Tok isn't too assy about it either.
Right.
Like, they're really mature about it, I think.
That's good.
And that's good, and the drama doesn't focus on it too much.
Mm-hmm. There's that cop who I think, she's, like, everywhere. I see her all the time. In fact, I think she's the homewrecker from Fight My Way. And she's also the new secretary in What's Wrong with Secretary Kim? But whatever. Yeah. There's some cop that's totally in love with Wu-Tak. And I'm like, oh my god, just love her. Just why can't they just have his bears?
The only place it goes, it was, like, gross. I was unhappy. So, like,
uh-oh.
Well,
yeah, don't spoil for me. But, so
basically,
I...
Basically, in a situation, like, at the end of the drama, they're like, oh, he'll be okay. Is Lee Jong-suk being like, oh, like, this new situation that you'll be in, there'll be spoilers, so I won't say it. This new situation will put you, like, a lot of younger girls that you'll be their oba. And I was like, no!
Ew. I guess. Whatever.
I know, that's why. Wait, Lee Jong-suk, get in your corner.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, no, I really love it. I love how, you know, as we were talking about before, like, what we want on The Flash. Seeing, like, the journalist brings a story to the cop, and then they put together a different piece that helps the prosecutor, you know, helps the lawyer in his case. I'm like, oh my god, hello! It's so good!
Sort of makes While You Were Sleeping the culmination of this writer's other works, because, mm-hmm. like, I Hear Your Voice was all about the prosecution, or really about defense.
Mm-hmm.
It was about public defenders, and, like, that role, and how much they should care about it, and what people deserve, but, you know, balancing that with not being tricked by people, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So that was about the law in a very, you know, drama way.
Of course.
And then Pinocchio was all about responsible journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And how irresponsible journalism can destroy people's lives. But the important role the journalism still has to play when it's done by responsible people.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's like While You Were Sleeping is like culminating all of that together.
Aww.
It's just a cool arc for... I think. Now, I would say of the three, Pinocchio's the weakest. just because that's one where, like, that drama is literally named after a syndrome that the female lead has, but then the show is all about Lee Jong-suk's character.
Of course.
Like,
of
it's
course.
All dark and everything. Yes, of course. So, like, for that reason, it's just the weakest.
Uh-huh.
Because I Hear Your Voice, I feel like, is about the both of them. In terms of character growth, she probably is the most. She's a high school student when it starts. So he gets growth because he grows up. Uh-huh. She does, too.
Okay.
And they push each other in that, and then while we're sleeping, it's the same.
Good.
I would have liked a little bit more exploring the mythology of her. Like, they sort of explain why everybody else has visions.
But not what she does.
She seems to be, like, the Typhoid Mary.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Patient Zero.
And they never... Yes, Patient Zero. That was the other one I was like, something Zero. And there's never, like, I would have liked to know a little. Oh, God, no, I can't. I don't know how far you are.
Yeah, I just finished episode 6, I think.
No, then I definitely can't talk about what I want.
Little steps, baby steps. But the last new one that I'm watching and recommending is Are You Human 2? That there's been 5 episodes so far. Now, the plot is a little bit shakier on this one, and especially like when they do the corporate dealings, I'm like, I don't know what's happening. But I love the robot. This is basically about, you know, dude, there's a robot version of Chaebol, and he has to pretend to be his human side. And then, of course, he has a female bodyguard, Sobong, who is, like, working against him, but also kind of is interested in him. Like, she sees that he's such a sweet bean because he's a robot. He's not actually the person. The real guy's a huge asshole. But the robot's so sweet. So she's like, oh, he's so sweet. I don't want to work against him anymore. Anyway, I love them. I love the show.
That makes me kind of sad because... then I want her with the robot.
Exactly. I don't want her with the robot. This is the issue. The issue is like, I really want her with the robot. So I'm like, how are they going to do this? Like, I'm scared. It's the one that I'm scared. Like, I would never recommend that you watch this one live because the ending could be really bad. Like, the robot could sacrifice himself after teaching the human to be a human. But it's been 5 episodes and the human is like in a coma, right? He's been in a coma since episode 1 when he was a huge asshole. So I'm like, when is he going to wake up? And, like, is there going to be enough time for him to wake up and then become human enough to be worthy of things that the robot should have instead? Because the robot should get everything, and the human should just...
Because I'm actually... There's, like, 3 K-dramas that I can think of right now that have a very similar plot to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, making use... Because there's Big, which was a trash fire.
Oh, Big's a trash fire?
Like, oh, God. It's such a shame.
Oh,
like,
no.
Gan Yu being really comedic. Oh, God. No, it's a trash fire. So, like, she's... engaged to Gan Yu, adult Gan Yu, and then somehow there's a coma situation with, like, a teenager, one of her students, and then that teenager is in Gan Yu's body, and then she falls in love with the teen, like, it's...
That's uncomfortable.
Similar, like, what, but then, like, whatever, and then there's Jekyll Hyde, me, which is the other split personality drama.
Oh, fun.
That aired the same year as Kill Me, Hear Me with Hyun Bin. And that one, there's, like, the nice personality and the mean personality. And so it's like, well, I don't want them to go back together. Because, like, I mean, I guess maybe the idea is that they merge. But I don't know. I read some stuff where, like, implied that that did not resolve well. Like, it didn't make sense.
That sucks.
And then, oh, I know I forget the third one, but there was I immediately thought of a third one, but I forget it
now. Oh.
So they do that a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's one with Joe Jung-suk. No. Who's our K-drama host? Jung Jung-ho. He is in one, Falling for Innocence, where he's, like, a real asshole and she hates him. And she has a really... Oh, God, this killed me. So her fiancé, boyfriend becomes fiancé, is the guy who was the second lead in Descendants of the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
And he's this cop, and he's really, really sweet.
I love him.
And they're adorable, and then he dies. And then his heart is transplanted into Jung Jung-ho, and that changes his personality. And so she starts falling in love with, I know, you're just like, what? But they really indicate that it's not just, because you could have maybe worked it, been like, it was this near-death experience.
Exactly, yes.
A metaphorical change of heart.
And then it just so happens that he's got her man's heart, and then it's a little bit awkward, but.
Yeah, no, like, I don't know that, like, how much they imply, but, like, the dead boyfriend, his, like, character trait was that he was always, like, chewing on lollipops.
Uh-huh.
Like, he always had them, and then, like, Joe Kenko starts doing that after the heart surgery, so they're, like, really heavily implying it. There's, like, the heart is responsible for some of the personality change, and then you're just like, there's so much wrong with this.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to start. And that one, the second male lead, who you love for a long time and is in love with her, and you, like, want that to happen, turns out to be the murderer. And you're like, what the
That's horrible!
That drama's a mess.
Oh my god. Well, thank you for, you know, telling me to avoid that one.
Stay away from all of those, because I follow Junker Girl around.
You follow him around?
I was like, do more, yes.
You wait outside his house. You're like...
I'm like, do more happy things, dude. Like, he was so... I never had seen him until Miss... Well, aside from my very, 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 very first drama. I never seen him until Missing 9. That's a trash fire. He was so good. He was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't... But I feel like the dramas that he's in that are the highest quality are all the, like, thrillers.
Oh, yeah.
So it makes me sad that I can't see him in something that lets him have his comedic side, but is also really good. But it seems like Life on Mars might let him have some comedic relief.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
As well, and maybe we'll... Somewhere on Drama Fever or Vicky or Netflix or somewhere.
Yeah, some probably Netflix, since we don't know what the heck it's doing.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it has to do with rights, since it's a remake, but...
I don't know.
There's a lot of remakes.
Is there any other dramas you want to talk about before we run away from the pain?
No, because I'm not watching anything right now. I'm watching anything new right now. Like...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm still finishing. I've got two episodes left over Planet 1994. So I will just close out by saying that, like, I don't understand. I understand why you would not ship Na Jung and Trash, because it's, like, a weird, kind of a weird dynamic. It's a weird relationship. And the fact that he's basically her brother is also a little bit weird. Although, I don't have as much of a problem with that, but it's weird, because, like, his whole thing is that he doesn't act at the appropriate time. Like, he takes too long. He's always late. So I'm like, I get it. Like, you were like, I'm tired of, you know, her having to wait, so I don't want them together, sure. But, like, why you would ever think that she was going to end up with Chilbong, I literally don't understand. Because he's super, like, I don't know. Well, first off, yes, he likes her and he tells her he likes her, but she knows that he likes her really early on in the drama, and she never once, like... It's been 19 episodes, and she doesn't have any romantic feelings for him. She's like, all right, well, that's nice, Chilbong. Thank you for sharing that information. And so, like, one time, it was New Year's, right? So he told her that he liked her, and he kissed her. And then she just ignored it. And then, like, another year, they meet up, and it's midnight. And then she, like, covers her mouth so he can't kiss her. So I was like, well, that's the... quite...
That's clear, dude.
Yeah, that's, like, the biggest rejection. Like, I don't understand how people were fooled. How were they fooled? And I even read, like, reviews and people being like, I can't believe that we thought that it was Chilbong for 10 episodes, and then, like, they're making it trash. And I was like, what were these 10 episodes? Why did you think that? So anyway, that's all. I'm sorry. So I'm sorry if y'all love Chilbong, but it doesn't make sense. It's just not logical. Not that, you know, you can love him. That's fine. He was very cute and sweet. But it also makes sense for him to be the husband. That's all.
I think when I get back from Philly, I'm going to try to watch Sassy Go-Go again. It's a high school drama.
I want to see that one.
Jung Yoon Ji. I started the first episode, and I don't know why I didn't get into it. But now I found out the male lead is the guy who was... He wasn't the second male lead. He was kind of the second male lead, but he was never interested in her. And Jugglers.
Okay.
The other one.
Oh, yeah. I like really him. Adorable. I love him.
He was cute. I was like, aw. And then I found out, I was like, he would be perfect as a high school student alongside Jung Eun Ji. Like, I think they would be really cute, so.
Aww.
I think I'm gonna watch that one.
Okay. I want to see it for Eun Ji. I want to see that for her, so, like, it's definitely on my list.
I will let you know, because Trot Lovers was a mess.
That's what I heard.
I keep talking about her character. The only good thing about Trot Lovers, so the second male lead in Trot Lovers is the guy who was the villain in My Love from the Stars.
Oh, okay.
And I went from My Love to the Stars to Trot Lovers, and I was, like, terrified of him for a while. Because I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah, he's pretty terrifying.
He's really good. He is a good, like, she should have, in some ways, gone with him. I don't know. But there's one scene, but there's an amnesia plot with the male lead.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And I think somebody is, like, so it's the second male lead, the villain from My Love from the Stars. And somebody is, like, filling him in on the fact that, oh yeah, the male lead has amnesia. Like, and somebody's like, what's going on with that? And, the villain guy is like, oh, I don't know. Like, he rolls his eyes and I'm like, I need to get this moment.
Yes. Like, that feels like an appropriate reaction.
So happy.
That's so funny.
The second best thing about Trot Lovers. The best thing is Jung Eun Ji's music performances.
I'll have to find those. I love her. Anyway. So I definitely will watch Sassy Go-Go for her. All right. Mm-hmm. And that has been our updates on things that we have watched parts of.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.